When you have a real fear of dying and being just another person, that I live to pay the bills. I mean, $1,000 a month. This is my life. I spray for cockroaches, man. If that makes you feel good, that's great. It didn't make me feel good. I wanted to, the first time in my life, after 26 years, it was 24, 25, wherever I was, I wanted to feel good about myself. As I have the ability to see the end before the beginning even begins. And what that means is I know that to get to the very end, I can see it right now. So before I went to Bud's and I was losing all this fucking weight and shit, I saw myself walking across the fucking stage at 191 fucking pounds. That's what I had to get to get into the door. I saw myself 6 months, a year later, whatever it's going to take me to do it. I saw myself walking across that stage, getting that fucking certificate of graduation from Bud's. And I was able to be there at 300 fucking pounds. And that feeling that I was nowhere near that fucking feeling, I was able to put myself there a million times every fucking day. And that feeling of like, my God, that is going to feel fucking amazing. That's what made me suffer. That's what allowed the pain to be real and say, this is worth it. I want to feel for this fucking next 18 months. It took me 18 fucking months to finally become a Navy SEAL, to finally, you know, just get through Bud's. 18 months. It's 6 months. It took me 18. That's what woke me up every morning was, I'm going to put myself through this much fucking pain and suffering for a few seconds. That's all it is. A few seconds of joy. And it's so fucking worth it, man. That's what people don't get. So I'm able to put myself at the finish line, even though I have no finish line, but at the finish line of an event before I even start the motherfucker to say, how are you going to feel at the end of this?
As far back as I can remember, I craved a seat at the table. Even when I was a punk-ass teenager, I knew that one day I wanted to sit at that mythical table among the greats in my field. I suppose you can trace it back to a deep desire for respectability. I desperately wanted to be somebody because I felt like a nobody. That's why I was drawn towards special ops at such a young age. And when I realized I was flunking out of school, it's why I was so motivated to change. I knew that I would never arrive at that table unless I took myself and my life more seriously. And yet, as much as I wanted to be among the greats, the decision makers, the anointed ones, I spent years waiting for a formal invitation. I don't know how many times I visualized receiving that embossed golden ticket to the dinner I dreamed of, where steak and lobster tail would be served by those who admired and wanted to be near us. But I expected to have to prove something first. I figured if I inserted myself into the proper organization or structure and met the standard consistently, someone would notice me, a mentor or guide, and give me directions to where all the power players gathered. I was not looking to be at the head of their table. I wasn't delusional. I just wanted a seat. In the meantime, I became one of the waiters who served the elite. Before long, some of my peers, who in my mind weren't as qualified as I was, were seated at the table too. I sucked it up and served them, still hoping that one day I'd be tapped on the shoulder and someone would pull out a chair for me. I wanted so badly to be anointed and validated by my superiors. I wanted to be told, "You have finally arrived, David Goggins. You are now recognized to be one of the best." Trouble is, that formal invitation rarely arrives. And for me, it never did. But while I waited, I observed my so-called superiors at close range. I watched them work, studied how they presented themselves, and realized that most of them were fairly common motherfuckers. And I wanted to be uncommon because it is the uncommon story, the uncommon leader that inspires others to seek more of themselves, work harder, and rise to the occasion. It's no secret that the vast majority of people prefer to be led because it's easier to follow someone else than to break your own trail. Yet all too often, we are led by bosses, teachers, coaches, and powerful officials who wear the rank and title and deploy optimistic speeches, management lingo, and strategies they learned in some university or seminar from their colleagues at that table in the executive suite, but do not inspire us. Perhaps it's because they talk way too much and do far too little. Maybe it's because their own lives are out of control. Whatever the case, over time, it becomes obvious that these men and women who we once admired from afar don't have what it takes to lead themselves, let alone anyone else. Yet when they reject or ignore us, we allow that to limit us and our ability to influence the organization we belong to and the people around us. It doesn't have to be that way. Too many people mistake leadership for what happens at the top, in the spotlight, around that mythical table, when some of the most powerful leaders are hard at work in the shadows. They know that opportunities to make a difference in the lives of their neighbors, family, coworkers, and friends are ever present. They wield massive influence without having to say much, if anything at all. And the first step in becoming one of these unsung heroes is learning how to become a self-leader. And I was a kid who kind of got the, kind of like the bad genes. You know, I have all these little sickly issues, all these allergic to shit. I was a little sickly kid. And it's funny how when people hear my story now, they want to put a title on me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm superhuman. And I love it because basically it makes you feel better by putting a title on me.
Right.
You can do it too. And so basically—
It's a choice.
Yeah, it's a choice.
Yeah.
It's a horrible choice.
Right.
It's a hard choice. It's a lot of suffering involved. Yeah. So for me to get the start line, through that start line journey, I realized I'm capable.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens through this whole process is the change of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's a change of the guard.
Mm-hmm.
Someone once owned my brain. I never owned it.
Yeah.
I had no control.
You outsourced it.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Everybody had it. It was my dad's fault. It was the kids that called me fault. My mom wasn't home fault. My soon-to-be stepdad's fault. The little kid that got ran over by the bus fault. My life was, everybody had a piece of my brain.
Yeah.
And through this journey of suffering, and the suffering I put it in, because I started finding myself.
Yeah.
And I started, oh no, I'm taking this back from me. This part of my brain is mine now. And I started puzzling back this piece of my brain. And through that, I grew confidence.
I became the roughest critic in the world on myself. And that's what changed me. I literally saw myself in the mirror. I saw the truth versus saying, you know, my dad did this to me from beating me. Kids in school from calling me nigger did this to me. My life did this to me. My broken foundation did this to me. I took that and said, you know what? Well, some people may help this happen, but now I have to own this. No one's gonna come back to save me. No one's gonna come back on this couch and say, hey, it's okay. You're gonna be okay. No, I'm not. I'm not gonna be okay. I had to realize I had to take a stand. I had to make a real stand. And it was painful to look at who I was, what the world and myself created. It created a very lonely, depressed, insecure man that would do anything just to have a friend. And I saw that as very pathetic. When you look at the truth, it becomes very ugly and pathetic. I would call this guy up at almost every night, about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and give him an update. I said, hey man, I've lost 25 pounds. No one knew what I was doing. I'm really good at creating an enemy. I'm really good at creating something that I'm against. And I'm also good at, if you ever tell me something that I cannot do, I'm gonna let you know that I'm doing it. Somehow you're gonna know one way or another that I'm doing it. It may not be like in your face. I may make sure that I run across the daggone world. So then it's on the news and you turn the news on the hell. I wanna do something that, you know, I'm here. So every time I lose like a big significant amount of weight, I call that recruiter up and say, hey man, I'm here. And before I knew it, man, this guy became almost like my best friend at that time because I started actually changing his life. He started seeing, wow, man, like, I'm glad I took a shot in this guy. And not only did I lose weight, I had to go back and take the ASVAB test to give us like a watered down SAT a couple more times just to get the Navy SEAL. It was a big process. So that 3 months was packed full of like failures, depression, even more. But what I found out in that whole 3 months, I lived a lifetime in that 3 months. I started realizing if I can flip these insecurities upside down, if I can flip this fear,
If I can flip all this that made me this depressed, insecure guy, if I can flip it and make it work for me versus against me, I started seeing the power in failure, the power in insecurity, the power in self-doubt. Because I looked at everybody. It may not be true, but that's how I looked at everybody, as being way above me. I thought to myself, if I can be at the lowest part in the world, in the sewer, and be able to overcome all this shit, I started using that as power, and I slowly started passing the guys from Harvard, the guys from MIT, the guys who were these great, from great families. And oh my God, I'm catching up. I had nothing. So I started flipping it and using this power.
Every day I wake up, I don't just run a mile, 2 miles. It's the one thing I hate the most to do, and I do it like I love it. 250, 60, 70, 300 mile runs at one time, no sleep. And every step, when I get to the, think about this, I get to the fucking start line, cussing at Jennifer. Why the fuck am I here? I hate this shit. After 70 some hours of running, every fucking question I ever had is answered. Every question I had is answered. I cap success. People go, what do you mean you cap success? For me to be who I am, so when I go smoke jump, I'm smoke jump 3 to 4 months out of the year, sometimes five. So basically you jump into fires, not into them, but you jump by fires that people can't get to. So you parachute out of airplanes and then you fight the fire. You and sometimes 4 other guys or maybe 8 other guys, guys and gals, and you're putting this fire out. So I lose millions of dollars every summer to do this. It blows people's minds. Why the hell are you doing this? I'm being sick, knees are jacked up, hitting the ground, hurting, whatever. Talking to normal people, they'll never get it, so I don't even explain it to them. But this is why I call cap success. I'm talking financial success. For me to continue having that willpower, the second I just become a speaking monkey and travel around and speaking gigs 12 months out of the year, put camps on, do this, put on lectures, get supplement lines and do this and write more books. I've ruined the exact thing I worked on my entire life. And while I didn't know it until the day, but something always told me, this is a very, very, very perishable skill, this willpower that you have, because I do have a willpower that I have never seen in anybody in my life. It is a haunting force that just keeps me going. And I know that that is my strength. If you have that, so that's worth every dime I've ever made in my life, is the fact that I can look a man in the eye finally and have a real conversation without going like this, because I'm lying or I'm a piece of shit. Or I know, you know how a person, and so many people do this shit, they're talking to you on who they want to be. They're lying to you. And they walk away, I've done it so many times, walk away like, God, man, why can't I just tell him the truth? Why the hell can I just tell him the truth? You know how good it feels for me now to look at you in your eye and every man and man I see? Because women won't get this. Women will not get this. Man to man, that man, you look another man in the eye and you know that everything you're saying is real. And it comes from a real working place, something that you earned. It's the best feeling in the world. Who I am and who I say I am, I am. No more lies. No more skirting the truth. No more bullshit. And that is worth every dime I've ever made in my life. And I swear to God on that. Every dime I've ever made in my life, building who I built, so I cap success, because I know that if I ever go 12 months out of the year, and don't put several, every day I'm going at it, but several months out of the year, I go right back to ground zero, which means I'm just fucking David Goggins. No Goggins, no carry boats, logs, bullshit. It's just pick up that fucking Pulaski and dig. Hey, get that fucking pump, walk down a mile, put it in the fucking water, mosquitoes beating. You're just David Goggins. You're nobody. Because that's where my growth is. That's where my willpower comes from. And that's where it stays. That's why when I talk to you now, and can I talk like this, dude? People don't talk with this kind of passion because it ain't there. It ain't there. They're regurgitating some shit from 30 years ago. I'm regurgitating shit from an hour ago. Come on, man. It's just be real.